Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome and thank you for listening in. My name is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm so happy tonight. I have Christine Amston back with me. Hi, Christine. How's it going?
Hi. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Making it through the summer. You're making it, trying to survive this heat and all. Christine you're going to be reading from a brand new paranormal that you've got. Mm-hmm. Now, you've been here in the past with your Kathy Scott paranormal detective series. And mm-hmm. But tonight you're going to be reading from Madison Song, which is a brand new paranormal romance. And this one's got werewolves in it. Oh. I'm salivating here. Now, Madison Song, is this, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but is this a standalone or is this the beginning of a new series? I've got to ask you right off the bat.
That's a perfect place to start, actually. This is a standalone companion to the Kathy Scott series. Madison was actually in the Kathy Scott series as sort of she started as kind of a throwaway character. She was just, I just like, okay, Kathy needs some friends. I'm going to call them Madison and Caitlin. And over the course of the four books, both Madison and Caitlin actually said, hey, I need a story. And so this one's Madison's. It does stand alone, though. I actually got a whole new editor who had never read the series before, and I sent her the book, and I said, now edit this, and the primary question I have for you, I mean, if you got something else, say it, but the primary question I have for you is, do you understand it, having not read the series? And she gave me a couple of, a couple of little things here, but basically she said yes, and I'm really excited to say that you can read this without having read the series. If you go back and read the series, there could be a couple of spoilers, but this is a darker, this is more adult. So I think that, if you're like really excited about the idea of werewolf romance which actually I really do like werewolves. I really do. You could come into this. It will probably seem to you as you're reading it like, wow, Madison's got a lot of backstory. And that's because she was in four books and some things happened to her there. And I had to, kind of bring you all up to date. But I have all that information in there. So it's all here. You can just read this book.
Oh, cool. Now, for those of you who don't know about Christine, she's been writing fantasy and science fiction for as long as she can remember. She loves to write, and it is her dream that others will be inspired by this love and by her stories. Now, speculative fiction is fun, it's magical, and it's imaginative, but great speculative fiction is about real people defining themselves through extraordinary situations. And Christine writes primarily about people and relationships, and in this way, that she strives to make science fiction and fantasy meaningful for everyone. You see, at the age of 16, Christine was diagnosed with Stargardt's disease, which is a condition that affects the retina and causes a loss of central vision. She is now legally blind, but this has not slowed her down or had gotten in the way of her dreams. In addition to writing, she also teaches workshops on writing at Savvy Authors. She also does some freelancing editing work, and she currently lives in Kansas City area with her husband, Austin, who's been her biggest fan and the key to her success, and they have two beautiful children. If you'd like to talk to Christine after she gets through reading the excerpt from Madison's Song, call in. The number is 646-727-2932, or you can come into the chat room and you can listen in there. If you have a question for her, feel free to type it in, and I'd be more than happy to relay it to her. Or you can email me your question, linda@lindamooney.com, and I will be more than happy to pass it along to her. Now, okay, so Christine, I am going to go ahead and, since I've already asked you about this book because I just couldn't wait until until later to do it, I'm going to go ahead and turn the floor over to you. You can tell us, you can give us the blurb for it, and then you can tell us about where in the book you're starting to read your excerpt, and you can just take it away from there. So take it, Christine.
Okay, that sounds great. Here is the book blurb. Her voice is enchanting, his soul is black. Madison Carter has been terrified of Scott Lee since the night he saved her from an evil sorcerer, then melted into a man-eating monster before her eyes. The werewolf is a slave to the moon, but Madison's nightmares are not. Despite her fears, when Madison's brother Clinton is bitten by a werewolf, she knows there is only one man who can help, a man who frightens her all the more because even in her nightmares, he also thrills her. Together for the first time since that terrible night, Scott and Madison drive to Clinton's home only to discover that he's vanished. Frantic now, Madison must overcome her fears and uncover hidden strengths if she hopes to save him. And she's not the only one fighting inner demons. Scott's are literal, and they have him convinced that he will never deserve the woman he loves. I am going to start in the prologue. I'm skipping just a bit because I'd like to get to the really intense part. But it really actually starts off with right away. Madison is on the floor. She can't move. She's bound by magic. There's an evil sorcerer above her. So I'm just mm-hmm. skipping just a bit so that I can try and get through the entire prologue if I can. This is the setup. This is why Madison's afraid. This is what this scene is about. This sets up Madison's fear that then she will have to spend the rest of the book overcoming. So, without further ado,
okay.
Silence, David commanded. Her throat continued to work, but no sound emerged. She felt like a fish being gutted, choking and spluttering as David returned to the work of cutting into the soft, sensitive flesh of her belly. Yet even as tears refilled her eyes and fear devoured her heart, some part of her recognized that her guts remained intact. Whatever David was doing to her with the dagger involved tracing shallow patterns across the surface of her skin. Fight the pain. Take deep breaths. Ground and center. She was not in the empty living room of a house she had not quite moved into yet. She was at church, singing in the choir. Above her, Jesus hung from a cross, a crown of thorns atop his head, a soft glow surrounding him. She usually found the magic within that glow. She reached for it. Stop that. David slapped her hard across the face. Once again, her eyes flew open. She saw the dagger dripping with blood. Her blood. Had her feeble grab for magic actually made a difference? David seemed to have noticed something, but what? You're just making this harder on yourself, David said. What do you want? Madison tried to ask. Her mouth moved, her lips forming the question, but no sound emerged. She didn't think he would answer. He couldn't even have heard the question. But, to her surprise, he only hesitated a moment before saying, Your soul. He lowered the dagger. Her soul? What did that mean? What could a man do with someone's soul? She now knew what he wanted, at least in part, but she'd been right. Knowing didn't make a difference. If anything, it made things worse. She couldn't calm down now. She couldn't focus. She needed to breathe, to block out all distractions in order to find her quiet place. How was she supposed to block out the razor-sharp sting of a blade slicing across her abdomen? How could she focus with her very soul in danger? Forget magic. Time to pray. Prayer was something she understood. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. David slapped her across the cheek, leaving behind a fiery trail. Madison prayed harder. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. She braced herself for the strike of his hand against her cheek once more, but it didn't come. For a heart-stopping moment, she thought her prayer hadn't worked this time. Then an ear-splitting crash shook the room. It felt like an explosion. Surely the roof would come crashing down at any moment. Madison instinctively covered her head with her hands and curled into a ball. She didn't have time to take in what had happened, either the crash or the fact that her invisible bonds had evaporated as if they'd never existed. The house still trembled and dust filled the air when a great primal roar made every hair on Madison's body stand on end. Slowly, she lifted her head. David stood in profile to her, his face white with terror, his gaze fixed on the splintered front door, which now hung precariously off its hinges. The sun had all but set, casting the unlit room in deep twilight, but she could just make out who had blasted his way through that door. Scott Lee. Her heart gave a painful little twang at the sight of the man she'd spent the past few weeks daydreaming about incessantly. Now here he was, like an avenging angel out of one of her fantasies, frightening her enemy and offering her hope. In that moment, she could honestly say she had never seen a more beautiful man. He wasn't particularly tall, but he was powerful, the clearly defined muscles of his bare upper arms rippling with strength. Rumor had it that he was a werewolf, and perhaps he was, Something lent him superhuman strength. The evidence was there in the splintered remains of the front door, and then, the next second, in the ferocity of his attack. David met Scott in mid-lunge, and Madison's hopes turned to newfound concern when she realized that David's strength matched Scott's. What if David won? She could see the scene more clearly now. The crystals placed in a ritualistic pentagram pattern, the bowl of incense, the tiny drops of crimson staining the beige carpet, and the dagger! She scrambled on hands and knees to reach the place where David had dropped it, tracing the ruby in the hilt with her thumb as she picked it up. She stood, trying not to focus on her weakness or the blood on her stomach. Now that she had the dagger, she had no idea what she would do with it. She didn't know how to fight, and even if she did, David and Scott were locked together in mortal combat. If she attacked, Scott might get hurt. Still, she watched and waited, her palms growing sweaty against the ruby hilt, ready to help in any way she could. Or make her final stand. Suddenly, the two men split apart. David staggered into a wall, hitting his head and bracing himself against a fall. Scott only stumbled backwards a step. He looked like he had the advantage, but for how long? Here, Madison called, slipping the dagger around so he could thrust it, so she could thrust it hilt first at her ally. Scott took the weapon from her, turned back to David, and shoved it in his belly. It all happened in a second and with almost feline grace. Scott hadn't hesitated. He hadn't balked. His eyes held no remorse. Time seemed to freeze. David's eyes popped open, gazing into his own mortality. Madison knew what he was seeing. She had seen the same thing only minutes before, and now she felt it again, almost as powerfully as she had the first time. It didn't matter that he had been about to kill her. It didn't matter that he was evil and needed to be put down. It only mattered that he was a man, and death was nigh. Scott withdrew the dagger from David's belly, raised it to his neck, and cut his throat. David fell. Blood spurted everywhere, drenching the walls and floors. Scott seemed to anticipate the gush because he backed away quickly, escaping the worst of the spray. Madison had never seen anyone die before. She was alive. She was safe. But at the moment, that knowledge paled in comparison to the horror before her. There was so much blood. The average human body contained 5.5 quarts of blood. Such a stupid thing to think, a mundane fact she picked up somewhere. But here were all 5.5 quarts, on the floor, on the walls, and on the remnants of the door. Madison trembled, the knowledge of life and death marking her in ways that would scar her forever. Scott had seen death before. She could see it in his jade-green eyes when he turned them away from the corpse as if it were so much busted-up furniture. He had other more pressing concerns, those eyes seemed to say, as they scanned her from head to toe. She shuddered at his blatant perusal, trapped between horror and fascination. How many times had she imagined him looking at her just like that? But in none of her imaginings had a bloodied corpse lingered in the background, nor had she borne the bloody, stinging reminder that she had nearly become such a corpse. Gingerly, she pressed a hand against her abdomen, cringing when it came away red. "The sun is setting," Scott said. "What?" "The moon is full tonight." Scott paused. "You know what I am, don't you?" "A werewolf." She whispered the word, as if afraid that saying it out loud would make it true. She looked out the kitchen window facing the western horizon, where the sun had already disappeared. Only the faintest of glows still marked twilight instead of true night. Would he transform in front of her, or was he begging her forgiveness while he sought privacy, leaving her alone with the destruction he had wrought? She longed to meet the wolf within him, partly out of curiosity and partly because she could not stand the thought of staying by herself tonight. She would never admit it to him, but she had read a couple of werewolf romance novels since meeting him, and they had tickled her imagination. Was Scott his pack's alpha? He exuded the right aura of power. "I'll take care of this," Madison found herself saying, though she had no idea how. Was she seriously going to dispose of a body? "I mean, if you need to go." "You don't get it. It's too late. There's rage in my blood, murder in my heart, and the scent." He sniffed the air. "You're bleeding." She swallowed convulsively. His words, his tone, this wasn't right. She saw her fantasies as a bubble on the verge of popping, but she didn't have enough real information to use as a pin. "I'll go clean up if the blood is bothering you." He licked his lips. Madison crossed her arms over her chest, only just realizing that her torn shirt exposed more than her belly. The ugly old sports bra she had been wearing while toting boxes back and forth from her car, stained in her own blood, would not be a big loss, but she wished she had been wearing her prettiest bra, even if it meant the garment's destruction. Not that Scott seemed to care one way or the other. He looked at her with pure heat in his eyes. She felt the sense of being overwhelmed yet again. He'd saved her life, hadn't he? She owed him a serious debt, and among sorcerers, those weren't just pretty words. What would he want? Would she even want to deny him? When I turn into the wolf, it's not me anymore, Scott said. Do you understand? No. Madison was more than half in shock. She tried to wrap her head around the words, but all she understood was his tone of desperation and that she didn't know the first thing about real werewolves. Of course not, but you will. It's not me. The beast acts on emotions and instinct and hunger. What are you saying? It might kill you. He swallowed uncertainly. The tiny movement made him seem more human, more vulnerable. It made her foolishly long for him even more. I might know a way to save you. I've never tried it before. Save her? Hadn't he already saved her? What is it? I need to mark you. Her mouth fell open, but no word emerged. In her mind's eye, she could see the pin approaching her fantasy bubble, but it had not yet popped. Something felt wrong. He was supposed to want to make love to her, not mark her. But maybe it meant the same thing to a werewolf. Please, Madison, there's no time. Madison still didn't understand his words, but she recognized the urgency in his tone, and she would have done anything to wipe the look of panic off his face. She nodded jerkily, and it was all the invitation he needed. He didn't even remove his T-shirt, only his shoes and pants. He came towards her, and she thought he would kiss her, but he didn't. Pushed her backwards until she understood that he wanted her to lie down on the floor. As soon as she had, he stripped away her sweatpants and underwear. Then he was lying on top of her, leaning over her. It was all happening too quickly. He'd said it would, but she hadn't realized how it would make her feel. Overwhelmed, uncertain, afraid. Shock almost gave way to numbness, but not quite. Scott was there with her, hot and heavy and suddenly real. She focused on that, on his physical presence and his strength. He had saved her already. Now he would keep her safe. Again. I'm sorry, he said, before thrusting painfully into her. She bit her lip to keep from crying out. She turned her head to the side so he wouldn't see the tears sliding down her cheek. It wasn't for the pain, though the loss of her virginity had hurt all the worse for her lack of readiness. It was for the words he had spoken to her, the words that had shattered an innocent girl's fantasy that a man like Scott would truly want her. I'm sorry. He withdrew from her long before she had fully wrapped her mind around what was happening. She felt raw, used. The evening had been one shock after another. Life, death, and the loss of innocence in so many senses of the word. And it wasn't over yet. She thought she heard him crying. Gathering her last shreds of courage and dignity, she peeled herself off the worn beige carpeting and approached him on her hands and knees, past the box of abused board and card games. Get back, he barked. She froze, paralyzed, unable to bear what was happening to him, and unable to look away. His face was twisted with pain, but she dared not approach to lend comfort. His change came neither quickly nor slowly. He melted into the wolf, limbs bulging and shifting, his form elongating, fur sprouting and tufts. The new form tore away his shirt, the shirt he had not yet removed. He looked at her one last time in the instant before the beast took over, something unfathomable in his yellowing eyes. Whatever it was disappeared. Then he was gone. The wolf wasn't really a wolf, though the beast did have something of the look of a canine in it. It walked on all fours, it had tufted ears, and its muzzle was the right shape. But it was too big, too fierce, too strong, and simply unearthly. Its fur was pure black, with none of Scott coloring, its eyes golden yellow. It wasn't him. He had told her it wouldn't be, but until she looked into those eyes, she hadn't realized what he meant. Scott was gone. Only the wolf remained, and the wolf looked at her as if she were dinner. She scrambled backwards, away from the creature. It growled its menace, but didn't initially turn its attention on her. Instead, it turned to David. The wolf was much larger than Scott had been. Fleetingly, she thought it looked as if it could swallow David up in a few bites. As if her thought brought actions to life, the beast sank its teeth into the one meaty thigh and pulled away a strip of flesh. Madison screamed. I could continue, but I think that might actually be a pretty good stopping point.
Oh, my gosh. Ooh, this one is dark. Oh, goodness gracious.
Yes.
It is
a bit darker than the other book.
And
yes.
You're going to start that? Is that where the prologue ends?
No, there's a few more
gosh.
Paragraphs. There's just a few more paragraphs as she wrestles with him over the night.
Finish the prologue.
You just can't bear for me not to finish the prologue?
No,
all
I can't.
All right, you got to find out if Madison's okay. She tried to close her eyes, but every time she screamed, they would pop open again. She couldn't look away from the blood and the gore and the intestines spilling onto the floor. The beast tore into the guts with relish, lapping up the feast it found there, and still she couldn't look away. This was beyond anything she had imagined or could have dreamed. An eternity later, the beast turned away from its feast. It looked at her, blood and a bit of something unidentifiable dripping from its muzzle. Then it stalked her. Already flat against the wall, Madison had nowhere to go, nowhere to hide. The beast loomed over her, staring at her with those great yellow eyes, and for a moment she knew she would end up just like David. Only he had been dead first. Would the beast kill her or eat her alive? It sniffed her. She reached out a hand to try to push it away, but it growled, a sound low in its throat, and snapped at her. She pulled her hand back. It went back to smelling her. It took its time, starting at her feet and moving upward. When it reached her belly, full of fresh cuts and blood, she was sure it would bite her, tearing her open. It likes the intestines the most, she thought, as it lowered its muzzle. The beast growled again, but it didn't attack. Slowly, it backed away, finally sitting on its haunches. Then it looked at her. It stayed with her all through the night, the longest of her life. If she moved, it growled. She longed to adjust her position, to soothe her stiff muscles, but fear held her captive. Each minute that ticked by could turn out to be her last. Any second, the beast could decide she wasn't worth keeping alive or that it was too hungry. She tried to remind herself that this wasn't Scott, that Scott wasn't a monster so long as the moon wasn't full. Only she remembered how easily and remorselessly Scott had killed. And, unfairly, she remembered how he had hurt her, even if he had done it to save her life. Come to think of it, how had he known to do that? Why had he come here tonight? The question kept circling through her mind, but Scott was in no position to answer. The night drifted endlessly on, a nightmare from which she could not wake. After a while, her body went numb, but her brain seemed to lose touch with the stiff muscles that could not bend or flex. The fear shifted into something else, something less immediate. It hadn't gone. It was more like emotional overload had placed her panic on mute. At that point, her mind was able to leave the present, to drift backwards and remember how things were supposed to have been. She'd first noticed Scott at the 4th of July concert when, for the first time in her life, not one but two men had suddenly shown an interest in her. She hadn't known what to do with either Scott's rugged appeal or Nicholas's boyish charm, but she knew which called to her. She hadn't even cared if he'd only noticed her because she had revealed her songbird gift to the entire town. He'd overwhelmed her, but that was a normal feeling for her, deep down where nerves and shyness couldn't penetrate. She had been secretly thrilled. She'd asked about Scott since then. Everyone had said the same thing. Stay away from him. He's dangerous. Dangerous didn't half describe it. Every time Madison shifted, every time she twitched, the werewolf growled, and she knew it would bite her. No, it would eat her alive. But time and time again, it returned instead to the bloodied remains of David McClellan, where it gnawed on the bones. Dawn came miraculously, unbelievably. The night came to an end, and the beast melted into Scott in reversal of what had happened the night before. The wolf didn't bear its pain as silently as Scott had. It howled during the long minutes it took to transform, leaving Madison with no recourse save to close her eyes and press her hands against her ears. Her entire body spasmed when something touched her back. "It's okay," Scott said. "It's over." She took a few deep breaths to steady herself, then turned her face to him, finding only marginal comfort in the return of jade green eyes. "I'm sorry," he said, repeating the words that had hurt her a lifetime ago, when she'd hoped he might have wanted more from her than safety. Now she felt too numb to care. "You did save my life," she whispered. "Twice, apparently. I owe you. I won't ask you for anything. Last night," he paused, darting a quick glance at the body on the corner. "At least it worked. I won't touch you again." Madison didn't have the will to respond. It was all too much. She needed to think. She needed to get clean. She rose on shaking feet, half expecting Scott to stop her, half hoping. He didn't say a word as she hobbled to the bathroom, where she began the work of cleaning her body. But no amount of washing could clean the debris from her heart or her soul, and the terror of that night would follow her into her dreams for years to come. And that is the end of the prologue. Mm-hmm. Chapter 2, or chapter 1, for the record, takes place 2 years later.
Wow.
So
That's completely different from your Cassie Scott. I mean, it's very different.
You know what happened, though? It was the characters. I mean, I wasn't after a darker tone, but Madison, and this just happened, this prologue actually, time-wise, it actually takes place just before the third book in the Cassie Scott series. I wrote it then because there were some other things going on, and that had happened. And a few other things happened to Madison. Her father betrayed her. She ends up getting engaged to Nicholas in the fourth book. That's Cassie's brother, and he betrays her. And so all these things have happened to her. So when it came time to write her book, it's just like, you know, she's not Cassie. She's not just putting a positive front on everything. She's a shy, somewhat insecure girl who has now been betrayed by several of the people that she's loved. And to find her inner power is going to be a different journey. And Scott, you know, I went with the kind of classic werewolf in here. It's not the shapeshifters that are popular, and I really do love them, but the popular shapeshifters where, you know, they change in their form, but they've still got their human mind. That's not what I did in this particular world. They're really beasts. So with that, it was now that said, this is probably the darkest part of the whole book. What I've just read is probably the darkest part of the whole book.
I like dark.
And I, you know, and that's not just, you know, scare away people who like dark or, you know, but it just is. This is the biggest darkness, and that, you know, the journey it has, there's hope and there's, you know, nothing's just completely dark. Otherwise, oh my goodness. You know, there'll be a couple of moments of comic relief even as you go on and the characters, you know, go through their journey. But yeah, that was just what it was. And I wrote it thinking, okay, how are Cassie Scott fans going to react to something that's so much darker? My early reviews are kind of showing me that they've stuck with me and that they still believe in me. And I've been just so happy about
that's
that good. because they've seen that what I did wasn't, you know, it wasn't about telling a certain kind of story. It was that I had these characters and this was their story speaking through me. And Madison is still, they love Madison as much as they love Cassie, but she's different from Cassie, and they've seen that. So.
Oh, yeah.
So.
We do have we have one question here. And
sure.
This is from Joy 3, and she says, when you write, what kind of special equipment do you use, if any? Oh, I guess because of your handicap.
Oh, yeah. No, that's an excellent question. I'm actually just, I wonder where it is on the internet. Oh, I should put it on my own blog. I will look for it tomorrow, the next day. I'll put it up on my blog. A picture of me sitting at my desk because I've got my monitor up on an arm that comes out to me. So, and I write in 36-point font. So when I'm sitting at my desk, so that I don't, because I've had back problems my whole life, and they're getting better. But one of the things, my husband's like, okay, I'm going to get you an arm, and he put my monitor on an arm so that my monitor now comes to me, so that I don't have to lean over to see. I'm legally blind. I'm not totally blind, so I can see when things are big, well contrasted, close. It's really kind of, you know, it kind of depends upon the situation. But I write in 36-point font with my monitor on an arm that comes to me.
Well, okay, then I've got a question here for you.
Sure.
I've noticed that I've been talking with several authors, and a lot of them are starting to put their books into a larger font. Now, I know when you've got a PDF and a Kindle that you can adjust those font sizes to be easier to read. But when you put your books out in print, do you offer them in a large print version?
Well, I do have a publisher that I go through, Twilight Times Books. I don't self-publish. And our paperbacks, the paperback of this book, by the way, isn't coming out till October 15th, is regular size. But the e-books you can enlarge on the machine. And also, I have these in audiobook. The entire Cassie Scott series is on Audible, and
Got
with my narrator. She can't actually start till August, but I'm thinking early this fall, this book will also be an audiobook, as well.
Oh,
and that's how
that
I read
so
most
cool.
of the time. I read on audio. I do have a Nook, and I do edit. I edit in 36-point font, too. I'm actually really good at it in 36-point font. I know people are like, what, you're a blind editor? I tell you, I catch things. I really do. And I sometimes tell mm-hmm. people, if you're having trouble catching your errors, enlarge the font. You'll be amazed what comes out. But and I don't mean 36 for normal people. I mean like 14 or 16 for normal people. But yeah, I do. And tiring. It's really tiring. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. I like to relax with an audiobook. And so I've offered that to my readers.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Well, Christine, it has been an absolute joy to have you on the show tonight. And the book is called Madison's Song. And it's you're out now doing a blog hop and doing a promotional tour for the book, and but it's at Amazon. Is it also at Barnes & Noble and all other avenues?
It's an ebook retailers. Amazon and Barnes & Noble are certainly the big two.
Oh, great. And like I said, it's called Madison Song. You can get it now if you love werewolves, if you like dark, this is the book. You got to go, especially if you like the Kathy Scott. This will pull you right back into it and just extend it. And I wish you lots and lots of luck with this book. It sounds great. Like I said,
I like dark.
And I like werewolves. So, you know, you've hit two of my buttons right there. So, anyway, thank you again for coming on. And we've run out of time, but when you get your next book out, contact me. You know where I live, right?
I sure do, and I will. I promise.
Okay, super. My name is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance. Thanks for listening in, guys. Have a great week. Try to stay cool. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks. Goodbye. And we're done. Boy, this one flew by. This one flew by. Oh.
Yeah, it sure did.
I love it. And it was just so, and the thing is, I could see it in my mind's eye. I'm a closet horror fan. I love horror movies and I love horror books. And I'm going, this is kind of sitting in between, you know, I love werewolves and I love the dark and I love the romance and I like the horror. And
that's why I say that this can stand alone, especially if you like the darker, edgier stuff, because Kathy Scott is almost borderline young adult. Some people call it young adult. I disagree, but that's, you know, a whole other thing. But yeah, this isn't. This is much, I think my publisher called it edgier. And that's fine.
Yeah,
you know, that's
is.
What it is. That's what it came out to be. And Caitlin's Tale is going to be too. I'll just let you know. I got the publishing contract for it. Oh, I should sign it and send it back. I just got the publishing contract for Caitlin's Tale, and it's going to come out next year. And it is also going to be dark.
Yay!
So.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. All right. Well, Christine, you take care.
All right.
And,
thank you.
Like I said, and
you
enjoy
too.
Your walk and enjoy your summer. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you again. You take care, all right?
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.